Welcome to How We Work. I am so excited to be joined by author, speaker, leadership advisor, and renowned conscious leadership expert, Jenny Clark. Jenny, that's a lot.
I know, right? I've been out here a while.
You do a lot. And I'm so excited for this conversation.
Thank you.
So as you know, we're work human, and we love to start every podcast by asking our guests about who they are as a human. So who are you, Jenny, as a human being?
You know, it just so happens that's kind of where I live. I'm much more about who I am than what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I am someone who's been on a spiritual journey for over 30 years. I've been a corporate executive for over 30 years. I'm a mom of a son who's almost 28, and a dog mom as well. And I'm purposeful. I'm committed at this stage of my life to really awakening people to the possibilities and not accepting what is and finding a more humane workplace.
You know, it's so interesting that you introduced yourself that way because, you know, we Work Human have been doing research with Melissa Dawn Simpkins and the She Suite organization. Mm-hmm. And this word purpose is coming up so much this year, particularly as we talk about women and their careers and the choices they're making for their lives. So, yeah. Very, very nice. Okay. So now let's talk about your work. And it seems like they're really aligned, you know, who you are and what you do. So you are focused on helping cultivate what you call conscious leadership.
That's right.
And I'm so intrigued by that term and what that is. So can you explain to me and your listeners what you mean when you say conscious leadership?
Yeah, I'll start by telling a quick story when it all sort of started to come together. I think this was the seed. I was an executive recruiter at Spencer Stuart, one of the world's largest search firms. And in my early days, I was initially a little intimidated that I'm going to be assessing, interviewing all these very senior, mostly white men. And I started interviewing them and I kind of went, that's it? After about a dozen, I just wasn't that impressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the resumes were interesting, but the people didn't strike me. There wasn't anything that really made me say, that person has depth, you know? And then I met somebody who did really impress me and I was like, what is it that he had? And it was self-awareness. And as I mentioned, I had been, at that point, I had already started my spiritual journey, which the catalyst for that was losing my father in the early 90s. And he had been my coach and advisor, and I happened to have two amazing parents. So his death and then my mother's subsequent passing about 4 years later really shaped and pushed me into wanting to explore other realms of consciousness so that I could feel connected to my parents. And I realized that self-awareness, at least the way I see it, is the beginning. It's the precursor to building one's consciousness, becoming more aware of yourself, what's around you, and then eventually what you can't see, you know, what's in the non-physical. I'm not asking everybody to buy into this. Some of it sounds very new agey, but I think it's the future because AI can only do so much. Your consciousness can do more.
Right, right. So I'm so intrigued, though, because a couple of times now you've mentioned this spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And so if you don't mind, can you just tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. For me, as I said, it was losing my father. I was just devastated and really confused. He was such a grounding force in my life. And as luck would have it, as the universe, I believe that there are forces that benefit us if we tap into them.
Yeah.
And because I was so sort of vulnerable, let's get my hair done. My hairdresser said, you know, you just lost your dad. Go get a massage. Here's the guy that gives great massages. I'm like, okay, fine. Well, little did I know, this wasn't just a masseuse. In fact, that doesn't even begin. This man is a healer, a shaman. He's got a degree in psychology, a degree in divinity. And 30 years later, he has been a dear, dear friend and my spiritual guide. And so, you know, just I've read countless books on spirituality, metaphysics, a little bit of psychology, but mostly around pushing the realm of consciousness. And so I meditate daily, and I want to bring some of this into the workplace because as I observed, especially when I got into the tech sector,
there's
something missing.
Yes.
Desperately, and people are suffering in the workplace.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. You know, personally, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, spirituality in terms of African roots and how that has been colonized out of being acceptable, in quotation marks, for people who can't see me.
Yeah.
So I really, really appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
So is conscious leadership about being self-aware, and how do you recommend that people start that journey for themselves?
I'm chuckling only because it's hard to prescribe. You know, I think a lot of people are kind of, there's a defining moment like what I went through where you're thrust into it. For a lot of people, something needs to happen. You hit rock bottom, you hit the big obstacle, and you just have to wake up. Others, I think, are just curious because they're not happy with what is, what appears to be. And so when it comes to leadership, I'm sort of, I'll integrate here some of the themes, because as an executive recruiter, I was trained to be very methodical about executing searches, about assessing candidates, and determining who's good, better, and best, for the role. And especially when I got to Google, which, you know, God bless them, they're a powerhouse,
Yes.
But they didn't appreciate, because they had talent acquisition and just had recently created an executive recruiting function, they didn't appreciate the rigor and the methodology that I was trained to support. And what I observed was, for one thing, and I had seen this, but it became that much more evident, there are leadership competencies, there are functional competencies. I'm sure you could probably parse it down even further. But I realized, and this is true for not just Google, but probably the majority of organizations, especially when they're hiring their senior leaders, they're assessing on the basis of experience primarily, which often is influenced by pedigree.
Yes.
Where'd you go to school?
Right.
Which companies did you work for? Oh, you must be, you know, I say I work for Google. People are like, ooh. I'm like, no, I was pretty something before I got there, okay?
You tell them. Tell them, Jenny.
They were lucky to have me, okay? but that's become the norm of how you assess people. And especially because I co-founded and led Spencer Stewart's global diversity practice. And Google hired me to build a similar practice inside of their executive recruiting initially. I'm all the more aware of how those assessments can be so far off. And yet there's grace given to people sometimes just by virtue of who they are.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh,
who
yes.
Let me say it differently. What they've done.
Yes.
Because it's not the who they are. And I often say, you know, being educated doesn't make you smart, and being smart does not make you competent. And I found a lot of people who were really incompetent leaders who might have been absolutely brilliant domain experts.
Yes.
And so that gap, I think, is what's causing a lot of the pain. And I'm going to call it pain.
Yeah.
It sounds dramatic. But I think, you know, the numbers that I look at all the time about why people are leaving their jobs, one of the number one reasons is their managers.
Yep.
In the top, in the top five. So it's time that we start analyzing some of these elements of consciousness. How conscious are we as leaders? How aware are we of, first with ourselves, first. It starts there. It's pretty hard to touch base with somebody and be empathetic if you're not even aware of how you feel.
Okay. That was very illustrative. Like, my mind is going, but can you paint a further picture for us? When you're thinking about a conscious leader, how do they show up, behave compared to somebody who is not a conscious leader?
I'll jump to, I created a podcast before I left Google in 2020. And it's called Fifth Dimensional Leadership.
Okay.
And the fifth dimension of consciousness is around unity, love, all these things. And I created the five dimensions of conscious leaders. So bear with me. I'm going to just run through.
I love this stuff. Go ahead.
The first one is know yourself. Speak your truth. Inspire love. Expand consciousness. and activate mastery. And it's in that order. Mm-hmm. And I've taught an online class, a few cohorts of one, and I'm going to start again for just online. These were live, where we took people through these five dimensions every week, one for every week. And so to get to some of the behaviors, but when you think about it, how well do a lot of leaders know themselves? Yeah. Very often they're, you know, and I would see this as a recruiter, people would just show their resume. And I'm like, tell me about yourself. And they'd be like, no, it's on the resume. I'm like, no, what's not on here? That's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. So the behavior is quite different when you have an awareness of yourself. We're back to that self-awareness. It all comes back. Tell me, how do you talk about yourself? One of the first question you ask me, right?
Yes.
Who are you?
Yes.
That's what you wanted to know. That's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. And as a recruiter, and that's what I want you to be able to articulate. And that's going to let me know that you are ready to actually, there's a possibility there, you know, ideally you kind of get through all five, but once you know that, can you speak it? Can you tell me the truth? Mm-hmm. Because I need to start hearing some truth.
Yes.
I don't need the platitude. I don't need you to be nice to me. I need you to tell me what I need to hear so that I can grow.
Right.
Good leaders do that. Right. And I think we've gotten so comfortable with, oh, well, I want to be nice. I'm conflict averse. I want to please people. As my mother used to say, you don't need to like me, but you will respect me.
That's right.
And so we should be aiming, leaders should be aiming for respect instead of being liked, as an example.
Yeah, being nice is not always being kind.
Absolutely not.
You know, and I think sometimes, especially with marginalized populations, their leaders are nice to them.
Yeah.
But it's not kind to not tell the truth to somebody.
It's not
right?
the truth.
And not give them the feedback that they need to grow and develop. So I love that distinction.
Yeah.
Something else you talk about is pattern matching or finding recurrent trends and behaviors as an important skill when fostering conscious leadership.
Yeah.
Are there nodes or key areas of an organization where recognizing patterns is especially important? And can you talk about why that is important overall?
Well, I might be a little biased because I realize I'm a systems thinker. Mm-hmm. I actually studied language when I was in college. I wanted to be a veterinarian and then didn't like animal science, so switched to a fallback French, which I was good at.
And do you speak French?
Not anymore. I was once fluid, but yeah. Not anymore.
I also aspire to pick my French back up.
It's so beautiful.
It is.
Yeah, I actually was able to dream in French.
Wow.
Yeah, I got to get back to that. But if you notice, and then I went to business school mm-hmm. from there. I was a recruiter for the University of California and went to business school, and I studied accounting. And once I got into accounting, which it was like medicine, mm-hmm. I can't say I enjoyed it, but I realized that it's the language of business,
mm-hmm.
systems. And that's, I'm a systems thinker. And so that's why I lock into pattern matching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people don't do that. They're looking so sort of singularly and one-dimensionally at an issue, a problem, a project, whatever. Maybe
right.
It's not a problem, but you're just looking at that just in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Zoom out. What are the patterns? What are the common themes? What has happened before? What might we predict mm-hmm. might happen based on what we know?
Mm-hmm.
And build sort of this more expansive view.
Yeah.
And so I think it doesn't matter what kind of work you do, the fact that you're able to match patterns in people,
mm-hmm.
what are some common traits that you find yourself attracted to in individuals?
Okay.
There might be bias there.
Right.
And you might be consequently missing out on people who might not be as outgoing
mm-hmm.
or conversely might not be as vocal, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that to me is part of the pattern matching.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it can be very sort of intellectual and very, you know, analytical, but others is quite behavioral.
Right.
And it comes from awareness of self, seeing some of those patterns in your own behavior,
mm-hmm.
so that that opens the way for you seeing them in others,
mm-hmm.
and helping leverage those things at the same time. I also created the internal mobility program for the senior leaders at Google. A couple months after I started, the head of HR was like, come do this. And in doing so, I realized that there were common patterns among a lot of senior leaders of sort of on some of these underdeveloped areas, namely their self-awareness of how they could take some of what they'd done and move it into another area.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, their manager would have helped them identify those things.
Right.
But I'm all about creating the agency in an individual and helping them build out how can I make what I know applicable in other arenas. So it's connecting dots.
Yeah. There's so many interesting points that you just made that I just want to, you know, underline and underscore. I like the idea of looking for patterns for the purpose of asking yourself, is there bias here? Because, you know, I also started in recruiting and I was in selection. They're kind of complementary, right? I was doing pre-hire assessments.
Yep.
But one of the things that I noticed, and I know other practitioners have commented on this as well, when people are hiring, particularly if they don't have, you know, good objective criteria, they default to the extroverts.
That's right.
Even though extroversion may actually not be good for that job. Like if somebody is, you know, needs to be heads down in work, but they're a social butterfly, like that's a pattern that shouldn't be, right?
Yeah.
So, and the second point that you made that I find interesting is this idea of, you know, what are the patterns between what this job needs versus what that job needs, yeah, so that somebody who's good over here can also be good over here.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking about that very early in my career and calling it the transportability of competencies.
Yes.
I am sad that never took off, but
we need to get back to that.
Right?
That's at the center of what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this current day discussion about skills might get us there because people are starting to deconstruct jobs and ask themselves, what kind of skills are required for this job? How is it related to that job? And so I'm really excited about that frontier, actually.
Yeah, I am too. And I think I used the word competencies earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't,
you did.
I was known as Miss Competency because that's how I was trained to look at things.
Yes.
And I realized once I got to Google and elsewhere and other companies that I'd worked with and for, they hadn't articulated even the job description in their minds in that language.
Right.
And I found a definition of competencies that I love. Because people say, oh, they're the same as skills. I'm like, no,
they're not.
They are not. And here's a simple definition, and then I'll share mine. The simple one is they are skills plus knowledge plus ability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right?
So. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's, and the knowledge is, do you understand the system of which you're a part? And do you have the ability, mental, physical, emotional ability to do it in a way that needs to be done in a moment, right? You can't just be an automaton and just do the exact same thing. The way I describe them is using the language that you're the only person I've ever heard use the word deconstruct. They are the deconstructed elements of how
That's
you
right.
do something. Because as I've alluded to, I've known plenty of people who can say that they've done it,
right?
But they did it poorly.
Yes, yes.
And
yes.
We don't take that into account. We assume the fact that you said you did it means that you're good at it. That's a pretty gross assumption.
It is a gross assumption.
Yeah,
yeah, gross is in large, but also gross is in gross.
Bad.
So let's get back to conscious leadership. So if people are interested in starting this journey of being more self-aware or getting better at pattern matching, is there something that they can do in their personal lives to help them? Is it journaling? Is it meditation? Is there something else that you recommend for people who are trying to get better at these things?
I don't like to be too prescriptive on this because I think everybody's got to kind of figure it out for themselves and just become reflective. I think journaling is a great tool to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are in therapy. That can be a doorway into it. Ultimately, you've got to spend time with yourself.
Yeah.
And you've got to start making decisions about how you want to live. There's the how again, right? It's not the what, but the how. And you decide, who are you going to be around? Are you gonna stay in this job? Are you meeting your needs? It starts with you, and I think especially for women, we are always in the mind of putting other people first and thinking of ourselves last.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the things for women that you have to get to first, to say, I need space.
Yeah.
I need to just be with myself write some things down, figure it out, sit with my bestie if that's what it takes, and talk through some things that I need to know myself better. I'm back to that.
Yeah.
Know yourself, speak your truth, and start articulating that and telling people what you're about and what boundaries you have, what you will and will not do, and learn to say no.
I love that advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Something else that you talk about as you talk about conscious leadership is this idea of mentorship. Do you have any advice for someone looking for a mentor? And what would that advice be?
The advice is, I have so many people ask me, based on social media, will I be their mentor? It's like, I don't know you, I don't work with you, I don't live near you. I'm flattered. But get somebody who's in a space that you want to work in if you're not, they're not already there. Understand it's not a relationship that might last forever. You know, I think people want to glom onto someone. Be clear about what it is that you want to learn and what you want exposure to and what you want some advice on. That's what you're looking for. So look close by in your organization and outside of your organization. Maybe it's through a professional association that young folks should be getting involved in. And I'm not seeing that to the extent that I saw when I was coming out of business school, as an example. But that's where you find like-minded people. And you can expand your awareness of a particular function or sector that is of interest to you. So I think that's important. And then move on, right? This isn't, it's not a forever thing. Get what you need, move on, and pay it forward. Be a mentor to some of the young folks.
I love that. What is your perspective on, you know, how mentor relationships should be constructed in terms of demographics, like woman mentoring woman versus having a male mentor, or, you know, your same race or ethnicity versus different?
Yeah, I'm sure there's statistics on that. You know, I think there are advantages to all, and maybe you have a few different people. I wrote a book that came out in 2011 called Career Mapping, Charting Your Course in the New World of Work, and in it I talk about the 8 different kinds of people who should be in your network. And they include mentors, sponsors, advisors, recruiters, friends.
Yeah.
You know, so there are a lot of different people that you need to be able to go to and consciously cultivate relationships with. And this isn't for the sake of job hunting, because a lot of people are just mind their own business and live in a little bubble until they decide they need a job or get fired. And wake up and go, oh, now what do I do? And who should I be talking to?
Yeah.
You should have been cultivating these relationships all along so that you're staying current.
Yeah.
Right? That's my fear about remote work, is that a lot of folks are missing out on some of the conversation at the water cooler. They're not going, even if they're working remotely, they're not going to some of these mixers and receptions and conferences to interact and build that network and that community that they need to support their career.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a leading question, because we did some research with the C-suite, and as part of that research, we started out interviewing women and talking to them about things like mentorship. And I was personally surprised at how many women had male mentors. I mean, they had great things to say about those mentor relationships and, you know, what men had done for them in their careers. Do you have any advice for somebody? Because I love that you said, you know, also pay it forward. What are the things that people should think about as they're mentoring other people? Any advice to give there?
I'm trying to think about how I've done it. Because I've had a couple of mentors myself, my dad being one of them, and a coach, right? So there's a difference between mentors and coaches. You typically pay a coach, first of all. And I do have one.
Okay, good.
Today, which I never had a formal coach before. But just in terms of being a mentee, was that the question?
No, we can do both. What is your advice to a mentee, but also what is your advice to a mentor?
And what their role is.
That's right.
I think, as I think about it now, I think it's asking a lot of questions.
Yes.
It's, you know, helping people get some clarity, because I think a lot of folks come into this expecting to just kind of sit down and get this dump of wisdom. And when you're at certain stages in your career, in your life, you're not even able to process some of what they might be telling you. Mm-hmm. So it might be better to contextualize and sort of moderate by asking questions about where someone is, what's actually happening. You know, how did you process that? How did you interpret that? Was there another way that you could have looked at that? You know, so those are things that I think could be really helpful to get people thinking. That's what I've come to realize at this late stage in my career, that I would have benefited from, and that would give me a greater sense of confidence as I'm going out there, and less of the last thing you want a mentor to be is a crutch.
Yes.
Right? They're there to help you figure some stuff out, I think, by asking you the right questions.
I absolutely love that. Well, I have so enjoyed our conversation today. As we wrap this up, are there any final thoughts that you want to leave with our audience? Any final words, tips, advice?
You know, I think we're at a really interesting time in our civilization. Mm-hmm. And the workplace is a microcosm of that has had so much strain and stress. And I said before, I think people are suffering. A lot of folks are struggling with mental health issues, with just all of the dynamics of
loneliness.
Loneliness, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to combat that. And I think, again, I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to try to prescribe any particular set of activities, but I do want people to get to know themselves better and to begin to speak their truth, speak truth to power, use your voice, build a narrative about yourself that you can share with people. Inspire love. You know, I'm back to there's the five dimensions again. We need to give more love. Mm-hmm. And if we did that, you wouldn't find the toxicity and the fear that we're seeing in the workplace. Be open. It doesn't have to be this way. And I think I just talked in terms of the 5% of leaders in an organization and the 95.
Yeah.
The 95 need to start acting and understanding the agency that we have as employees in a workplace. We're not beholden to the leaders. We have to start showing them what it is that we need to work effectively and to feel good about ourselves and to really support the company in the way that they say they want to be.
Yeah.
To earn our trust.
Right? So I know I asked you for a final thought, but as you were speaking, it just made me think of something like maybe we need to practice our introductions and how we introduce ourselves.
Absolutely.
You know, because so many times I'm in these meetings and that's the first thing that happens. Can you introduce yourself? Or at a lunch table. So maybe we get really intentional about that and practice it until it feels true to us.
That's right. It's an affirmation blended with your narrative narrative is who you are, like you asked me.
Yes.
It's not just what you do. That's incidental.
Yes.
But who you are transcends all of that.
Yes. Another thing that I did that was super helpful, Lovey Ajayi Jones talks about an Oriki, which is a Nigerian tradition, and it's like your personal hype song. Mm-hmm. And she has, you know, her Oriki in her book, Professional Troublemaker. And I've seen online that she started to write Orikis for other people that she admires. And when I read that book, I wrote my own Oriki. And I had the honor of reading it to her when she was a guest on this show. And I felt like it gave me a lot of confidence. It gave me the opportunity to marinate on what are the things about me that are central to me. You know, and some things came up that were not professional, like fashionista. You know,
yes.
I love some good fashion, right?
That's right.
And so, yeah, maybe that's something else people can do as they think about who am I and how do I want to show up the world and walk through the world?
Precisely.
Thank you so much for this. This has been fabulous.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.